Welcome. On behalf of the AU Research Center, we want to thank you for attending today's presentation. Upcoming presentations on December 7th, which is a week from today, Cam Jugdev, Maureen Hutchison, and Kerry Markowski are presenting online course innovations, The Great Debate, and the MBA Orientation. Our next session is next year in 2006. On January 18th, Robert Holmberg and Conrad Michalski are presenting Technologies for Speeding Return of Students' Assignments. The FOIP announcement. According to FOIP regulations, we must inform you that today's Lunch and Learn presentation is being recorded. The purpose of recording is to allow people who are unable to attend today's session to borrow the tape or view the proceedings. The proceedings will be found online and the link will be provided. It is my pleasure now to introduce Terry Anderson, who will introduce Terry Anderson. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Shirley. Well, welcome everybody. We've got about 10 people here in Athabasca, and looks like we've got about 10 people online as well. I'm talking, or for those who don't know me, I'm in the Center for Distance Education, and a faculty member teaches in the Masters of Distance Education program. My title seems to have disappeared. It was supposed to say social software. Is it the killer application for Athabasca's university student-based programming? I'm going to be quite bold and suggest that social software can revolutionize undergraduate self-paced learning at Athabasca in different ways, or it has the potential to. And so what I'm going to do, and I'll just go to my next slide, is I'm going to set the context by giving you a schmaltzy poem. I hope you'll bear with me for that. And I'm going to have just a slide about how do we innovate at Athabasca? Whose job is it? How does innovation happen here? And then I'm going to get into the crux of this presentation, which is about social software. What is it? Give you some examples. They're mostly non-educational examples, and I think we're just at the point now where we're trying to build them. And then I'll talk to you a little bit about the research plan that I'm and the innovation plan that working with others here at Athabasca to use a particular tool called Me2U at Athabasca. And then I'll demonstrate that tool at the end. So for those who are new to Illuminate, there is, in the middle of your screen on the far left, there's a little hands up figure. And anytime you have a question, please feel free to raise your hand or a comment. And then I'll stop talking, turn the mic over to you, and then you have to remember to release the mic, and we'll get going again. So let me set the context by telling you a little bit about a poem that I happened to find at a garage sale, a book of Robert Frost poems a few months ago. And as I was reading it, it's called The Tuft of Flowers. And it's about a guy who goes out to cut hay in the morning with a scythe. And it kind of resonated with me for two reasons. The first was that for about the 15 years I lived up in Jusart, Alberta, for the first seven or eight of that, I was sort of a back-to-land farmer. And every morning I used to get a scythe and cut down some clover and feed it to the rabbits mostly and the chickens. And so it kind of resonated to me what these guys were all about. And the story is about a fellow who comes after the first guy has come along with the scythe, and he's the raker who rakes the hay up, and he's thinking about the guy who came before him. And I hope you'll see the resonance with what it's like to be a distance education student at Athabasca. And again, I'm not talking about the graduate cohort programs or the ones that are delivered at learning centers. I'm talking about the self-paced, continuous enrollment students and their experience. So bear with me. If this is a little too schmaltzy, bear in mind that I grew up in Calgary and heard cowboy poetry right when I was 2 years old, so I hope you can handle it. Here goes. I went to turn the grass once after one who mowed it in the dew before the sun. The dew was gone that made its blade so keen before I came to view that leveled scene. I looked for him behind an aisle of trees. I listened for his whetstone on the breeze. But he had gone his way, the grass all mown, and I must be as he had been alone. As all must be, I said within my heart, whether they worked together or apart. But as I said it, swift there passed me by a noiseless wing, a wildered butterfly, seeking with memories gone dim or night some resting flower of yesterday's delight. And once I marked his flight go round and round as where some flower lay withering on the ground. And then he flew as far as the eye could see, and then on tremulous wing came back to me. I thought of questions that have no reply and would have turned to toss the grass to dry, but he turned and led my eye to look at a tall tuft of flowers beside a brook, a leaping tongue of bloom the scythe had spared beside a reedy brook the scythe had bared. And then my picture got too large and I can't read the next two lines. The mower in the dew had loved them thus by leaving them to flourish, not for us, nor yet to draw one thought of ours to him, but from sheer morning gladness at the brim. The butterfly and I had lit upon, nevertheless, a message from the dawn that made me hear the wakening birds around and hear his long sigh wisping to the ground, and felt a kindred spirit to my own, so that henceforth I worked no more alone, but glad with him I worked as with his aid, and wearily sought at noon with him the shade, and dreaming, as it were, held brotherly speech with one whose thought I had not hoped to reach. Men work together, I told him from the heart, whether they work together or apart. So I guess I see in this the lonely distance learner working away, wondering what other students are doing, or maybe there's another student who actually lives on their block who's actually in Athabasca program, but there's no way because of freedom of information that we can inform that other person of who they are. And there's sort of all these people. I'm not suggesting that everyone wants to work together or meet other people, but some people do, and we haven't been able to provide that to them thus far. So my next thing that I've been thinking and boring my colleagues in Center for Distance Ed is, what's the role, how do we innovate at Athabasca University? We had a model developed from the British Open University and we put it in, and now the technologies are coming one right after the other very quickly, and whose job is it to make sure that we're up to 21st century kind of standards? And if I think, well, in the past, you look back, the School of Business with their call centers was an innovation. SIM with their cooperative learning teams, Center for Distance Education with our online CIDR and the Erodal Journal, maybe. Computer Science first developed the portal. It's almost there. But is it up to faculty to innovate? Is it their job, or is it EMD? And I guess the bigger question is, do we have a culture of innovation at Athabasca University? And I heard from our in Edmonton at the strategic planning the consultation we had last week, there was sort of a sense that, you know, we're not moving fast enough with, especially on the technical side of the house. So that's my challenge to think about, you know, is social software, is that one of the solutions and one of the things we should be using at Athabasca University? And just a bit of a theoretical background about the technologies of distance ed. Basically, distance ed has always been technologically driven, whether it's a postal service technology or whether it's the printing press or high-speed video conferencing, whatever. Currently, we're moving towards everything converging onto the net. And Thomas Hulsman, boy, these pictures. I keep cutting out my text. In any case, he wrote about two kinds of technologies. There's the information technologies, and they're the anytime, anywhere, the customizable, the fact they can be in multimedia format, they can be, you know, audio, video, but they're basically one-way information transmission kind of technologies. And I put this picture of Star Trek because remember how they could go up to the computer, they could ask any question, and the answer would instantly come back. And you can see how close we're getting to that kind of a dream with Google and some of the other tools that are around now. But those are the information, and you would include books in that and the kind of technologies that our independent study programs is based upon. Oh my goodness, did I go too quickly? Sorry. The second one is the Type C communications technologies, and those are the telephone, the asynchronous, the synchronous, the text, the audio, video, things like this Illuminate tool, and the fact that they can be recorded as this Illuminate is that conversations can be captured. We have blogs now, so we're starting to have the interactive components, the communications technologies are starting to be recordable, and they're also in multiple formats. And the cost of these technologies is going down quite significantly. So if you can see that, There's two solitudes of distance education. You see the independent study ones on the left, which are usually based on type 1 information technology with maybe a telephone call or three or four for tutors. But on the right, you see the collaborative distance education model, so-called third generation, where you have a lot of audio, video, computer conferencing. That's more like our grad programs now over on the Type C, although they use a little bit of both. But where I see a new area, and I'm sorry the color just lost, is socially enhanced independent learning, or using Type S technologies or social technologies. And that's what I'm going to talk about, is that intersection being created. Type S social technologies, they allow users to find each other, to cooperate either online or face-to-face when they need it and when they want to for learning. It uses the intelligent power of the net to filter, to control, to enhance processing so that you don't have to to talk to everyone in the world. You just have to talk to people who are in your program, in your course, on your assignment, that sort of thing. There's many of these social technologies. It's sort of the dot-com frenzy era. There's 380 of them listed on Mescal's list. A lot of them will fail, but we've latched onto one that we're using in beta now, and I think it's got a lot to say for it. Okay, what are the components of a social software tool? Well, one of the main ones is notification, because we found that when you notify students that there's some new thing happening, pretty soon everyone's email box starts filling up with more and more and more, and we need some way to control, to filter, sometimes even with GPS we can have it so that information is pushed to you, but only when you're in this building or in this coffee shop or at that zoo or something like that. The other problem that we've had is with computer conferencing, is that if it doesn't notify you when there's a new message, you might post a message to a student or a teacher, but you go back for the first couple of days hoping that somebody has responded. But if they don't respond after a while, you give up trying, so that when they do respond, oftentimes you're not there to even read it. So we need better notification tools. And the most popular one is RSS these days, and it allows you to subscribe to certain sites, to certain course sites, so that when a change is made, it'll automatically appear in your RSS reader instead of your email. This is an example of mine with all of the different sites that I'm subscribing to. And whenever there's new information, it comes with a header. And it's a sort of a push kind of social software tool that sort of goes on top of email and sort of allows you to keep in touch without being overwhelmed. The next function of social software is to filter. And if we were able to filter all the information that comes into us and say, let my instructor filter for just ed tech stuff or have students filter for each other, what we would do is we'd be able to get this huge swamp of information, and we'd have ways to allow different people to filter it. And probably the most popular one that I use, even down to an ex-tutor here at Athabasca, who has his online learning daily, where every single day he filters the blog sphere and websites and journal sites, and he makes little summaries that he emails or RSSs out for us. So many interesting ways to filter. I've got a program called Outfoxed on my browser now, and it looks at when I type a Google search, it says it goes and finds the sites that my friends think are good or recommend, and it puts those ones up on the top. So instead of getting the whole world's view of what comes out on Google, for me, I get my friends' things first, because the things that my friends like are more likely to be interesting to me than what the whole world likes. Persistence is another function of social software. If we're just talking on the telephone, it's gonzo. So we need ways that we can record things and reuse them, turn them into blog or podcasts or other ways that we can make things go longer and persist in cyberspace. We have to have recommender systems so that when you find a good resource, you can recommend it to somebody. Or if you're an undergrad in a program and you find a site, we need to have a social software system so that you can share that knowledge about how good it is with all the people who are coming before you or coming after you. This is Stephen Downs filtering. He filters for me and for many in the community. If you're looking for daily, if you're lonely and your email box is not filled up enough, to subscribe to Stephen's list is a good way to keep in touch with all of this sort of stuff. Here's another one that watches blogs, thousands and thousands of blogs, and you can type in a keyword and it'll search for them and find them, so you don't have to go around searching. Another big area is social bookmarking, and that works that instead of, most of us have on our browser, we have a whole bunch of sites that we've bookmarked and we'd like to go to. In a social software, you don't bookmark on your own machine, you bookmark them out on the net so that other people can find out things that you think are of value, and so that you can search on keywords and find what other people have tagged. And there's Flickr is, no not Flickr, Furl is one of the big ones as well as Delicious, but there's a number of these social software tools. There's a picture of Furl, and that's how I use it in my class with articles that I have bookmarked. And then the students can rate them as being good or bad, and the students can add new bookmarks as well. There's another one, site you like. Many of us keep, if you're writing academically, you use EndNotes or ProCite or one of those tools for keeping track of all of the sites that or the articles that you like. But now we can do that socially by doing it out on the net. And this is a site called Site You Like, and you can search for articles that other people have recommended. Of course, the first thing I did was punch in my own name, and nobody had recommended any of my articles, so I had to spend the whole night typing them in as being wonderful sites. Some of the characteristics of social bookmarking. The thing to mean is that they don't require you to tag them by some arbitrary set of guidelines. You get to tag them with words and language that you mean. And they often have RSS feed as well. Folksonomy is a new term that says, let the people tag them and identify them and cluster them in whatever descriptions they have. And you see this on Flickr where people put their pictures, instead of having them in a box in your bedroom, you put them up on the net, and then you can send a bunch to your mom and a different set to your boyfriend, and so you can sort of organize, but you can tag them and use them as you want. Certain problems, though, with folksonomy is synonyms, spelling mistakes, spaces and abbreviations. So it's a little more challenging to retrieve, but it's a lot easier to enter, and that's why they're so popular. Here's another site, a social software site, where you write down the 43 things that you're trying to do, lose weight, get an A in this course, whatever. And you can you go there, and there's like thousands of people who've got things they're working on. And they provide hints, well, here's how long it took me, or this is what worked for me, or this did not work for you. And so we can start an informal group of people who've never met, but all around the world they're trying to, run a mile in less than 5 minutes or something like that. And you'd be amazed how many different things people are attempting to do in their lives, and now they can connect. The big one in social software is dating services, how to fall in love or lust or both. And Friendster is maybe the biggest, but there's lots of them. And then the question is, since a lot of people go to university in order, or one of the benefits they want is new friends and a new spouse or a first spouse, that's why they go to university. So why do they get denied that when they come to Athabasca University? Is it something that distance education, we just don't provide that service? Well, I think we could if we wanted to. This is another one, meetup.com. This is a crazy one because there are 172 groups around the world who are into dumpster diving, where they go out at night, two or three people, and they go into behind some of the stores and they dive for whatever goodies they can find. And I got exposed to this when my two kids came home from university last summer, and they're both vegetarians, and their idea of a good time was to go dumpster diving behind the health food stores in Edmonton. And so I'd wake up in the morning, there'd be a half crate of half-rotten eggplants and things like that, and I'm supposed to be grateful. But Dumpster diving is a kind of a unique group, but if you look in the groups in Edmonton, there's 85 different groups in Edmonton. There's the Leonard Cohen Knight group. There's all kinds of different groups. So there's ways, again, that, and I put this slide up because to suggest that it isn't just meeting online, it's meeting face-to-face, too, that the software are all about. Just another one of those meet signs. The big issue, it throws up all kinds of privacy issues. How do you protect people from weirdos, and how do you selectively release just information that you want and just to whom you want? And you might not even know the persons you're releasing it to, but you might be comfortable in giving your email address to people who are enrolled in your course, but you don't want to give it to everybody at Athabasca University, or nor everybody in the world. So you have to have a way to control that, and I'll show you how that's done in the system we're using now. Now here's Dodgeball, which is another one of those flirting ones, but since everyone is happily married here, we'll move right on. This is a contact service for academics. Meet other people in your discipline, talk with really long words to each other, all that sort of stuff. This is a network for people who are out to change the world. Action researcher, people, you know, activists use this kind of tool to, you know, do anti-globalization marches, all that sort of thing. Okay, now we're going to move just a little bit back to education and talk about freedom. And freedom, you know, is a concept that's inspiring both good and bad activities all around the world. But I think it's a hallmark of what we do at Athabasca is we provide freedom to study when you want and at a place you want. And so the freedom of space is what all distance educators are about. In Athabasca, in our undergraduate program, we also offer freedom of pace. We have freedom of time, so you can, you know, study when and as long as you want and what time. Freedom of media. We don't do a lot of that. We don't have multiple kinds of media yet, but we can imagine a time when we'll have the same content in multiple media. Freedom of content to study the kind of things you want and apply them. We have a little of that. Freedom of access means that the cost and freedom to have the technology that's needed. I think we're fairly good at that. I think we should be reducing the cost for students, but that's my own opinion. And then I added to Paulson's one, freedom of relationship, is that we should be able to decide what kind of collaborative learning we want or none at all with our students. And again, I think we haven't been able to do that in the past, to give freedom of relationship. So made a definition for social software, network tools that support and encourage learning through face-to-face and online social interactions. And then I kept this Paulson's idea of retaining control over time, space, presence, activity, identity, and community. So that's what we're trying to do, build these tools, give people opportunities, but not reduce their sense of freedom either. I think that this could be for education. Social software needs something besides dating to make it really take off, and I think education is a good one because it's defined by social norms, tools, and context. It creates a reason to get into these communities, and learners will pay for it, which is also important. And it has a culture, and we all know that a course is and how long they are and what's expected. So it's not kind of too out there in la-la land kind of stuff. Second, I think that social software is great for distance education because it supports self-paced independent study while still allowing you to build social capital. There is solutions to the privacy problems. Because it allows people to have a life outside of the education and inside and use the social software to connect the two. And mostly because some distance education students are lonely. Again, we've been self-selecting. We've only had those people come to us who are independent study. There's a lot of learners out there who, with a little social help, I think would like and would really appreciate the freedom of Athabasca University. Okay. Moving quickly to now, how are we doing this at Athabasca University? I'm doing the design-based study with Marguerite and Charles and a number of other people. but we're exploring the problem, then we're enacting some tools, then we're going to be evaluated in my class and in some undergrad courses, and then we've got some partners who are going to try it outside of Athabasca University. So the first is informed exploration. And we did a survey last year where we asked all the Athabasca University students who were in self-paced programming but who had an optional computer conference. And we asked them why they used it or did it work for them. And we also did a literature review and we phoned people around the world who were doing that space study. And here's the study results. 71% did not participate in those activities. So 3/4 of the students said either thanks but no thanks. And why didn't they? Well, some of them thought it took too much time. 17% said that they didn't even know it was there. 14% thought that it wouldn't significantly increase their learning. 10% had nothing to contribute. And there was not critical mass, which is why 10% said there was lack of recent message. But very few had no access to the technology. So that suggests to me that our enhancement activities that we tried before with the accelerator program to just put a computer conference up is not enough. It hasn't had a big take up. Okay. Survey results, 78% of the respondents indicated that they would interact with other students as long as they were able to proceed through the course at their own space. So there's only 22% who say they, under no any conditions, do they not want to participate. And the preferred mode is almost all asynchronous. They don't want to get in real-time telephone or chats. 70% of them prefer just the asynchronous. Uh, 95% of students want to look at the work of other students. Now you could call that cheating, or you could call that what happens when you, after a test in a face-to-face university, you go to the coffee room and you look at what the other person did and what the remarks were. And it's the kind of social things that we haven't been able to provide to our students in the past. But it's funny, only 25% of the students felt their participation should be graded. I find that a little discouraging because I think that if you just make all these things optional, our students are very busy people and they won't do optional things. And so I think we have to develop strong educational cases, why learning is going to occur, and then reward them with marks when they do it. Okay, the next thing we did was we looked at the kind of tools, we looked what was available, the kinds of social software tools that are around these days. They have some kind of combination of blogging where you can produce your own contributions. It can be used in similar ways to the way a threaded discussion works, but it's owned by the student. It isn't owned by the instructor or by the course. They usually have some sort of an e-portfolio where you can keep content or files, things that you want to release to people or have. They usually have some kind of an e-profile where you can say what high school you went to and what sports you like and allow people to connect with you. They usually have a wiki where you can collaboratively work together on something. And they usually have friends of a friend or ways that you can find your friends' friends because they're more likely to be interesting to you than people who are not your friends' friends. And we looked at three social software tools. Barnraiser from Sweden has a nice social capital kind of way to see who's participating, but didn't have some of the other tools that we found in ELGG.net. And that's the one we've picked. It's out of Scotland. It's in beta. It's been developed by two PhD students at the University of Edinburgh, one of them Canadian and is living in Canada now again. And the third American product called Wired Reach, which adds real-time communication to the social software, which the other two do not. This is a slide shot of me to you. And what I'd like to do now, and I know I'm yakking too long, is quickly just go to another site here. And oh boy. And I'll then bring it up and I'll share the application with you. And the site I go to is actually I'm going to go to elgg.net, which is the granddaddy of these, this particular software. Log me in. I better log off, and then I'm going to share this. Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to close this, and I am going to do an application sharing, and I'm going to begin hosting now, and I'm going to do ELGG. Now, with any luck, you should have been able to have it, your screen replaced with an ELGG screen. Can a few people just go back and give me a check mark or a smiley or something if they see that ELGG.net? Okay, good. Looks like most people have got it. Good. Okay, I'm showing you ELGG instead of Athabasca's. They're the same software. We didn't change it very much. We just installed it on one of our servers. The problem with the one in Athabasca is it's really only got about 25 people in it because it's only got one class of Master of Distance Ed students. ELGG is publicly available. It gives you the same functionality, only it's got a few hundred users. So you'll see what it'll be like if we if we start using this tool at Athabasca. So you log in, and anybody can log in. You have to get your free account and all that sort of stuff. So I'm now logging in, and it comes back with my little space, got my little picture there. Notice the RSS so that if anything new happens, it can be pushed to my engine. And the first thing I'll show you is the profile. You can see that it asks the same sort of questions. We changed it so that we asked what program you're in at Athabasca, what course you're in, when you want to finish, a bunch of things specific to Athabasca. You can see here the people under likes. I put things that I liked, beer and Bach and boats, and some of them immediately become hot link because other people like that same thing. So if I want to find, well, who else in the ELGG world likes Bach, you can see, oh, there's only two of us. But some people have talked about classical music. So there's other people who have talked about classical music, but there's not a big interest in Bach. If I click on beer, you see that that's much more popular, including Griff Richards, who some of you may know, and some people have put it under likes or their interests, and some people have it under their dislikes. Oh, that's interesting. This Frank Pan guy, who likes Bach, does not like beer. And people who, in their web blogs, have talked about beer, they're noted there too, so that you can sort of make a second tie-in with not only the interests that people have, but what they're writing about in their blog. Now, I'll show you now how the privacy is protected. You notice when I edit this profile, I move down, and under every one of these fields, like here under my interests, my access restrictions, I can restrict it to, I can let anybody in the world look at it, including Google. Or I can say just people who are logged in, or private, nobody can see it, or just communities that I've set up, or groups. And I've got a group of people from Athabasca University who are on ELGG, and we've got two communities, an EMD community and another Athabasca community. And then there's a community of people who are working on ELGG itself. So that's how you control the privacy. Students have to know that they can control it, and then they can decide who gets to know their phone number and all that other sort of stuff. Okay, the only last thing I'm going to show you is the blogs. This shows you things that different people have written. This is my blog, and people can comment on them, and then here's the comments on the little piece I wrote about social software and education. And then another guy wrote, so I wrote to him, and I can find out these guys If I want, I can, you know, find out more about them, find out what they've written. Here's Rory McGreal. We can see what he likes. We can see who his friends are. He only has two friends, but he's an administrator. You know how it is. Okay, you have a file space as well where you can share only particular files with other people. Each of the communities has a wiki space where you can write things and collaborate, and it's an open source standard MySQL, Apache, PHP kind of tool, so it can be worked and adjusted as people have time or energy. Okay, now I'm going to go back to Illuminate and I'm going to shut off the file sharing, and I think I'm just about done. And now, there are some pedagogical considerations. Anybody's really interested in the academics, George Seaman from Winnipeg, Red River Colleges, got a new pedagogy for the network age, he calls it, called connectivism, very interesting stuff. We've been working, developing learning activities so that it says, okay, if you're in this course, now go to MeetU, fill out this, do that, do this debate, and here's how many marks. And so now we're trying to, Marguerite from ELGG, or from EMD, is working with Charles in computer science trying to develop or change one of their courses so that it has an ELGG component. Here's the kind of activities we've got so far, discussion groups, posting reviews, surveys, working on a wiki, all that sort of stuff. And the third phase, we're going to see if people who participated in this, did they like it more? Did they perceive they learned more? Did they complete? Did their marks go up? All those sorts of things, and seeing if it really makes a difference. And then four, we, as I mentioned earlier, we have some partners who are also using this software, and we're hoping to get knowledge from across the country. So, I'm done. I'd be real interested and invite anybody who has any concerns or issues or thinks that maybe this kind of software could be useful in any of the undergraduate programs to contact me, but to give your comment now. So I'm going to turn it over to our audience. Either if you're in here at Athabasca, can you come up to one of the mics? If you're out in Illuminate land, just grab the mic. Go ahead, Vic. Thank you for the question. Comment.
Hey, Terry, when we were in our last faculty meeting, you mentioned that you thought that ELGG or EDU or whichever version might be useful in terms of electronic portfolio development. Do you want to elaborate on that? In what way would it be, and or would we might we be better off with something else if that was our main focus?
Right. It can be used in the sense that one can write blogs, one can add files and upload them to your ELGG space, and you can put access controls on who gets to see them, but it's only people if you control it within the MeetU system. So I think there are better e-portfolio systems. That wasn't one of the criteria that was really predominant in our selection of ELGG. I think maybe a better solution would be to have yet another tool, a portfolio tool, that could be a part of Moodle or it could be standing on its own. And I think it might be better to stand on its own, but it should be integrated across. But MeetU can work as a primitive portfolio, but it's not really designed for that aspect. It's not coming through. Just a second, Daryl. Sorry, we've got a question from here in the room, and the remote mic isn't working. I think I'll have to summarize. Daryl is saying that they had a tool called InterNetwork that said add some of the capacities for dating or finding other people. I guess, why don't you come down, Daryl, and join the conversation. I think the question I would ask back to Daryl is, you know, was it is it a tool, or if it was discovered, why aren't we using it, or what was wrong with it, or what was right with it, or getting to the innovation question, did it meet real needs?
Okay, we participated in a conference, Canada Unit conference, with 13 other universities across Canada last month, and I know about this because we helped set up some of the technology to interface with it, and it's a social networking software. What it did was profile the candidates or delegates that participated in the conference by asking them a set of questions that's completely configurable. And based on those questions then, this dartboard image would come up with, or look like a dartboard with pins all over it. And those pins showed you the relative rating at which you would align or not align based on what questions you chose from the mix. So it had a real nice interface. Like, it looked nicer than the ones you presented here today in terms of the look of the interface. Okay. So in the bullseye, you could then pick on the four people or however many people there were, and you got a nice visual map to how closely related they were to you. Why don't we use that? I guess because we're just discovering about it. So, okay. And this is commercial software, so you have to fork out money. Cost us about, I think, $15,000 to run a 6-week course with them. So I don't know what it would be for us to use it at AU for our whole student body, but it sure looked great for the dating mm-hmm. portion of having us hook up people together in that context.
Right, right. Good. Well, thanks for that. I'll check it out, and maybe it's something we can build in as we develop our social software scenarios. It raises the question, though, do you just want people who are like you, or do you want people who are a little bit not like you? You think of your own spouses, how much are they just like you, and how much are they not?
Yeah, this software would let you pick those people because they'd be on the edges of the dartboard.
I see.
Everybody on the edge of the dartboard would be antithetical in their viewpoints of or interests, anyway.
Right. Sounds good. Well, as I said, we're really at the beginning of social software. If you do, you can type in Judith Meskell's name, M-E-S-K-I-L-L, and it'll give you over 300 different social software tools. Now, many of them are just in beta, and some are commercial, some are open source, but it's a real explosion of interest. As people who've grown up with the net, they have portable devices, they're connected all the time, they want powerful software so that they can use it to meet their social and educational needs. Okay, well, I think we have time for one more question from out in Illuminate land. Anybody care to have a question or a comment? Go ahead, just grab that mic. Okay, Carmen asks a question in the text box. Do we have an answer for who is responsible for this and other types of innovation at Athabasca University? That was my email. Sorry. I thought somebody had raised their hand to answer that question. I don't think we do. I think we will, and we are evolving there. I think it's being talked about a lot more, and I think that with our new administration, our new president, I think we were in survival mode for the last decade. Now we're into growth and innovation mode, and I'm quite hopeful that we're going to see a lot more innovation in the next few years at Athabasca. But it's not just going to be one guy out in the woods like me telling people the sky is falling. It's going to have to be integrated into all of our activities, I guess. So, Carmen, why don't you give us your shot on innovation at Athabasca? Okay, well, seeing how there is no more questions, more comments, I guess we'll just thank you all for attending today. And these slides and this talk will be posted from the Research Center. So if you think somebody else should listen to it, invite them to do it. And thank you, Shirley, for helping with the logistics and the help desk. So bye for now.